Hi, everyone. My name is Bill Marzak, and I'm a student at UC Berkeley and ICSE. I'm also a research fellow at the Citizen Lab. And the title of my talk today is When Governments Hack Opponents, A Look at Actors in Technology. And this is joint work with John, Morgan, and Vern at ICSE and Citizen Lab. All right, so this paper is kind of about the topic of protecting individuals from nation-state attacks. So this is in contrast to areas which have received much more attention in the research community recently. For example, the problem of protecting individuals from large-scale attacks conducted by cybercriminals or institutions from nation-state attacks, or in other words, APT. These have been fairly well studied recently. However, the problem that I'm talking to you about today, protecting individuals from nation-state attacks, has received comparatively little attention. So the paper and the talk that I'm going to give today present kind of a first look at this space. And I'll be talking about the nature of these attacks, what we observed, what sort of technology was being used, the infrastructure to conduct them, and all the while emphasizing the real impacts on real people. And the paper looks at three Middle Eastern countries, and I'll talk about one today. So the paper talks about three countries in the Middle East, Syria, Bahrain, and the UAE, shown here on a map, and looks at various actors, governments, pro-government actors, cyber mercenary groups in these countries, the theme being attacks on political activists in these countries. So just a bit of brief context before I jump into the research. So the Arab Spring started in the Middle East in 2011. In Syria, people were calling for the end of Bashar al-Assad's rule. In Bahrain, protesters took to the streets demanding greater freedom and rights. And the UAE was kind of an exception to this. There weren't any mass protests, but citizens were petitioning the government and agitating for greater rights. So as part of these protests, in 2011, protesters communicated and organized using what were the hot tools at the time, right? Facebook, Twitter, social media. And in contrast with previous types of organizing and communication technologies, these are encrypted by default in that the transport layer is encrypted. So if, for example, the government has a question, well, I wonder who's logging into this anonymous Twitter account, there's no way for them to determine that because everything's encrypted. Or if they want to see what activists are communicating about, how they're organizing, they likewise can't do this using a traditional wiretap-based model. So all this has kind of spurred the look or spurred a turn to endpoint attacks rather than network-based attacks. And there's an industry, which I'll touch on later, which very much caters to this desire for endpoint attacks. You can see here two snapshots of ads, companies selling products to governments to attack endpoints, the message being you want to acquire the data that's on the device before it's encrypted. So our study is about three Middle Eastern countries, Syria, Bahrain, and UAE. I'll be talking to you about Bahrain today. So the question is, how did we communicate with these activists? How did we get in touch with them? How did we get the data for our study? So very much it was a case of the authors being acquainted with target communities. For example, I went to high school in Bahrain. I founded an activist group, Bahrain Watch, and in other authors had connections with some of the other countries. Some of our initial work very much helped us gain trust and gain connections. This is an example or an instance of some of our early work in 2012 looking at these types of attacks, which had good publicity, which further built up trust and cred with the activist communities and enabled us to gain better insight into these communities. So what we basically did is we asked groups in Bahrain, Syria, the UAE, activists, trade unionists, those kind of political targets, and we had them forward any messages, emails, tweets, Facebook messages, which they viewed as suspicious. So this is not necessarily a representative sample that we have here. We're just endeavoring to present a first look at this space. So we don't claim that we have representative data here, but we certainly got some very interesting data. So there's the amount of communications which we were able to, the extent of our communications with these activists was around tens of thousands of messages. And we had dozens of activists in these various countries and dozens of samples that we found as well. So this is a table here reproduced from the paper, kind of showing the extent of the data of which our study is about. So I'm going to begin with an anecdote which we were able to document in our paper. So this story ran on Al Jazeera, around mid last year, and the headline here is Bahrain student sentenced for insulting king. So this is about a university student who was actually sentenced to jail for 1 year, and he served 1 year in prison for allegedly insulting the king on Twitter. So he was accused of using a Twitter account, and we were able to actually get in contact with other people operating the Twitter account. It wasn't apparently just him, it was a group of people. And we were able to obtain legal documents from his case. So this is essentially an order which was relating to his account, a legal order. And so I've translated some relevant bits here. It's in Arabic. So this is an order to uncover the user of an IP address of this account, Al Kawara News. It's an account that tweets like news about the protests in Bahrain. And the IP, they're requesting information about an IP at a specific date and time. And the IP here, we've just redacted to not show the whole thing. And it's a Patelco, it's a residential ISP in Bahrain, and this is signed by the acting chief prosecutor in the capital region in Bahrain. So the question became, well, okay, how did they get this IP address at this specific time? What we were able to establish based on our engagement with activists and messages that they forwarded us is that the Facebook account that was linked to this Twitter account received this message. And the rough translation is, greetings, I'm a translator of the revolution, do you need translation of this? And there's a link attached there, you can see in the message. So this was sent from an account, Red Sky, which we were later able to establish was an activist who was arrested by the government, and the government apparently took over his account and was sending messages. So we investigated this link, and we found that the goo.gl link redirected to iplogger.org and then ultimately redirected to a tweet. So the individual who clicked on this link, and we were able to establish from the link statistics that there was one click from Bahrain with the refer of Facebook. So we were able to establish that there was one click on the link from a refer of Facebook, and it appears that this click resulted in this individual's arrest. We looked at the time that the link was created and the time of the click on the link, and there was around a 21-hour delta in between. So it appears that this was a case of an individual who suffered consequences by this link that was sent out from an account under the control of the government. So in our paper, we document this as part of a larger ecosystem of these attacks that go on, IPs using these so-called IP logger, IP spy links. And so in red here, I've highlighted on a diagram in our paper the story or the workflow which I just showed to you. So there's the Red Sky is the arrested activist whose account was then compromised and then used to target this Al Kawara News account. As you can see, don't pay attention to the minutiae of the diagram. If you're interested, you can read the paper for details. But this is just to give you a sense or a flavor of the scope and scale of what we found. This is not, again, not all the attacks we found. It's just some representative samples of these. We also document similar cases in the UAE and Syria. The interesting thing about Syria is the use of cyber militia groups, where the government does not appear to be directly carrying out the attacks. As was the case, as we found, with the case was in Bahrain. So I'm going to now jump into another kind of case study of the type of social engineering which you might find in these sorts of attacks. So this is an email which was received by a number of activists in Bahrain, including one of my friends. And the email appears to be or purports to be from Melissa Chan. You can see the from address there is melissa.aljazeera@gmail.com. So they're trying to impersonate here Melissa Chan. And there's an attachment on the email designed to be some sort of torture report or human rights report, content of interest for political targeting. And the attachment is a RAR file there. So we extracted it, and I guess you can't see the file names there. But okay. Ah, there we go. Oh, no. You
just do full screen, not just
slideshow. Okay. All right. So the files, when rendered by Windows, you can see they appear to be JPG files, right? They've got the default Windows Vista image icon, and it looks like the extensions.jpg. However, this is actually an instance of what's known as the Unicode right-to-left override trick, where the file name is actually gpj.bajr.exe, and the first character is a Unicode right-to-left control character. So this was kind of an interesting, clever technique they used. So the question became, what was this attachment? What did it do? You know, it was an EXE file, clearly, so there's probably something interesting. So we were able to analyze this and found that in the memory dump of an infected machine, or a machine where the executable had run, we found the string finspy in the memory. And it turns out that this name FinSpy is a product actually from this industry which I was alluding to before, catering to governments seeking to compromise endpoint devices. So FinSpies is by this company FinFisher, and this is a snapshot from one of their demo or promo videos for the product. And this is actually part of a much larger, FinFisher is one company, part of a much larger industry of these companies, which are catering to law enforcement, providing you know, support or systems to law enforcement. And this is a snapshot of ISS World, which is the surveillance conference, sometimes known as the Wiretappers Ball. And companies congregate at these five or six venues across the world every year and show off their wares. Governments come visit, and there's, you know, money exchanged occasionally. So these are some of the companies which you might find at one of these fairs. So FinFisher is one, Hacking Team, I showed you their pictures earlier, and a number of other traditional defense contractors, and some you might not have heard of as well. So the question became, all right, we had this sample which was FinSpy. Now, what exactly did it do? So the way we did this was we infected a machine and observed internet traffic from the infected machine to the command and control server for the spyware. And it turned out that they were using kind of weak crypto for this. So we were able to break the crypto. They kind of rolled their own as opposed to using you know, off-the-shelf libraries, which was kind of an undergrad mistake, as some might say. So in fact, they made a couple critical errors. They were generating weak keys, so entropy, hey. They were actually reading the system clock over and over to generate keys. And yeah. And they also had a slight bug with trailing plain text. So this is you know, some keylogger traffic. I typed FinSpy on the keyboard, and you can see part of it's not encrypted because, yeah. Anyway, so based on the analysis of this traffic, we were able to identify certain modules. So this is a snapshot from actually leaked documentation from the product. It was just recently leaked. This kind of shows the array of functionality that the spyware can have, and you can customize it as, you know, a government attacker. And by the way, this is sold exclusively to governments. So the initial you know, suspicion was, hey, this is the Bahrain government sending this. So we were able to observe several different modules in action. For example, live recording of the microphone, Skype recording, VoIP recording, stealing passwords through forensics tools, screen and webcam recording, key logging, et cetera. So there's kind of a wide range of functionality here that this lets you do. So the question became, all right, we found this instance of this spyware in Bahrain, and it's clearly interesting. It's used only by governments or sold only to governments. How can we empirically characterize the scale of this usage of the spyware on a global scale? Because clearly, Bahrain is not their only client. They must have other clients and other interesting places, right? So we basically undertook internet scanning using ZMAP, Shodan, internet census data, and a wide variety of these other types of scanning data which groups had generated. The question was, how could we actually like find instances of servers in these databases in Shodan and the internet census? Did the FinFisher server, the server for the spyware, leave a fingerprint which we could find? And it turned out there were a few. Perhaps the most bizarre of these at first was that the servers, when you tried to connect to them on port 80 and send them an HTTP request, they returned the string "Hello Steffi," which was quite distinctive and easy to fingerprint. They also made a few later implementation errors with regard to the use of UTC versus GMT and HTTP headers, and badly impersonating Apache servers in a very distinctive way. But kind of the what they're doing now, which is kind of interesting, we found, is that when you actually go to a FinFisher server in your web browser, it'll bring up the web page for Google. So you can see here, this is if you can read that, that's actually not a Google IP in the address bar, but we're seeing Google on the web browser. So the question is, well, okay, this is kind of odd. Maybe we can fingerprint this, but hey, maybe like, so we've got a search bar there. Like, can we do something with that, right? So what would be an interesting query to put into that search box? Well, it turns out, if you search for the phrase "my IP address," Google will print a little thing that says your public IP address is blank, learn more. So the interesting thing we noticed here is that the IP address in the address bar is different than the IP address that Google's telling us. So in the address bar, we have some US hosting provider. On the page, we have something in Indonesia. It's like an Indonesian ISP. So that's interesting, right? So what's going on here? Well, according to this other snapshot of leaked FinFisher documentation, they have two parts to their command and control infrastructure. They have relay servers, and they have a master. So what we believed that we were seeing was that the IP address which we found was indeed a relay, and then the IP address printed out by Google was a master. So it appears that there's some sort of weird proxying thing going on. Presumably they did this. They're like, hey, let's make it look like Google. No one will suspect that. But some implementation problems with their proxying technique here, leaking some information. So we basically did these scans, global scans, and we found FinFisher servers in a number of interesting countries. For example, countries in the Middle East, Turkmenistan, fairly repressive places. And we also did the same thing for another type of spyware, Hacking Team's RCS spyware, which is a competitor to FinFisher's FinSpy product. Okay, this is great. Where are we going with this research? Like, what's the next step? So right now we're undertaking some initial studies to basically get in contact with activists and find out to what extent they'd be vulnerable to these types of techniques and what do they need in terms of defensive tools. And then looking also at new types of vectors and threats. For example, the new big buzzword of the day is packet injection, and not just adversaries like, for example, the NSA, which are doing packet injection, but also these companies, FinFisher and Hacking Team, sell systems which are capable of modifying your internet traffic to insert exploits or other types of spyware. So looking into how we can defend or detect those things, as well as instances of other instances of the spyware. All right. Thank you very much for paying attention, and I guess I'm allowed to take one short question. So the question was, to what extent have these companies, Hacking Team and FinFisher, responded? The most recent response I can recall from Hacking Team basically accused the researchers of this paper and others of trying to interfere with Hacking Team's legitimate business operations of selling the spyware. So they're kind of initially the response was kind of more muted, but now it's more antagonistic, I'd say.